Will be.
Okay, good morning. I will go ahead and call us to order for our regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday morning, May 12th, and ask if everyone would please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you again and good morning. First item on our agenda is public comment number one. It's an opportunity for members of the public to address topics that are on today's agenda. Is there anybody wishing to do so? Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to agency reports. And we've got NAMI this morning.
All right. Hey, look like a different NAMI.
It's a little different NAMI. My name is Willow McLaughlin Hill. I'm the board president for NAMI and the current interim director for one more week. So NAMI's mission is to provide education, advocacy, and support to people living with mental illness and their loved ones. And thanks to the generosity and support we have, we can do everything we do for free. For education, we have Family to Family, which is a free intensive educational course for family members. We ran that last fall with a really good turnout, and we've got a lot of interest to do another one soon. We'll probably do it right around this fall, early fall. Also, peer-to-peer, which is a course for people living with mental illness. And this last year, we added basics, which is for parents of adolescents who are showing mental health symptoms. We also have our monthly educational programs that are open to the public. Recently, we did a provider-consumer forum, which was a really good success. We had Christine Krause with Mary Greeley, Kathy Dingus with Ireley Ball, Gary Rasmussen with Optime, and they just told people what kind of services they provided and what was going on with their agencies. Mm-hmm. For advocacy, we stay up to date with our legislative actions. We speak on behalf of people living with mental illness, and recently we've become more involved with AMOS and the United Way's community conversations. Mm-hmm. And for support, we have Connections, which is a group for people living with mental illness that meets twice a week. Family Support Group meets monthly. And daily, we provide referrals from our office. We still have our Emergency Loan Assistance Fund. And this year, we have loaned out $1,509 from the Story County funds and $277 using our own funds, which would be for people living outside of Story County. And we still have our Mental Health Wellness Center, which is providing Monday through Friday daily support and activities. We average about 7 to 10 people per day and, I think, 146 visits per month. So the big difference with NAMI right now, as you can see, last November, Deb Niehoff retired, and she was doing this as a part-time job. Since then, the region has approached us and asked us to provide outreach to all 10 counties in the region, and in doing that, make this a full-time position. So we have been searching for a new executive director, and we found somebody who will start next week on Monday. And she's going to work in collaboration with groups and volunteers from the region and all the counties to provide the NAMI signature programs, starting with family support and family to family, and then moving into some peer groups too. That's it.
Yeah, that was the one question that I was going to ask. Since I chair the Regional Governance Board, I knew that that was a concern or a desire for to make this a full-time position. So I was just glad to see that you were able to find someone and they're willing to work to expand that service throughout the region. So good. This person locally from the area, come from a background in this particular area?
Yes, she actually was a case manager for Story County.
Okay, super. All right.
Outstanding. Well, Deb is missed.
Yes, she is.
She did such a great job. But, Willow, we appreciate you stepping in and taking the reins for the last few months, and we're excited to start working with the new director and excited about the direction of NAMI and appreciate everything you guys do.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Have a great day. Mm-hmm. Consideration of minutes from May 5th.
Move approval.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Additions, corrections, or comments? Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Minutes pass. Personnel actions. We had a couple of additions on there, did we, Shell? Let's see. Add a transfer to the attorney's office and a correction for community services.
Okay.
Move approval with the noted changes.
Second, I'm just trying to see. Oh, I see it down here. Got it. Okay. And
all right. We have a motion and a second. Further discussion. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Personnel actions pass. Consent agenda, please add utility permit 1564, 1565, 1566, 1567, and 1568. And please add road closures 1542 and 1549.
No, through. Sorry.
Through 49. Through. Oh. Yeah, it's quite a few. Move approval with noted changes.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Consent agenda with the noted changes. Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda passes. Public hearing items, consideration of resolution 1573, the FY15 budget amendment. Lisa Markley. Hi, Lisa.
How are you?
That's okay. A big one.
Yeah, it is. This budget amendment proposal was published in all three newspapers on April 30th as required by law. The budget amendments need to be done by 5:31 in order to allow time for budget protests by 6:30. The revenues overall in this budget amendment are decreasing by $588,350 from the last amendment, which was September of 14. It is a 1.38% decrease in revenues. The majority of these decreases are related to FEMA costs that we've amended in and amended out. It depends on when they come. Grants, state revenues, including case management, the biggie is mental health property tax relief that we actually did not get because it went to the region, and less revenues from CLP. The revenue amendment is primarily important for the fund balance projections. That's the reason that we amend revenues. So that's the amendments for revenues. The expenses overall are increasing by $3.7 million from the last amendment. That's an 8.62% increase.
What did you say, 8.?
8.62% increase. 82% of these expenses for this amendment are related to the mental health payment to the region.
So just walk us through that one time. So that payment to the region is dollars that aren't really getting spent. They're just sitting in Story County's mental health account, and they're going to get transferred to the region's mental health account where they should be, since the region is the one responsible for those dollars, right?
Correct.
Good. So that's an expenditure that's not really an expenditure. It's a transfer of dollars. Okay.
Some of the other reasons that we are looking to amend the revenue or expenses is grant expenditures and unplanned purchases. Okay, this amendment will do this to the fund balances. The general supplemental will end up at 18.5%. The mental health fund will end up at 0.72%, and that is excluding the $1 million transition dollars that we have, $1 million worth of transition dollars that we're leaving here just in case. The rural fund will be at 16.9%, and of that, $85,000 is assigned for local option sales tax, 40% expenditures, and secondary roads will be at 24.3%. Questions?
No.
Yeah, I think it's important to note, again, and Lisa did a great job noting it, that the lion's share, and this amendment looks like every other amendment that we've done in the 5 years we've been sitting here, except for the mental health portion, as we make those transfers, and that kind of skews the numbers a little bit, correct?
Do you see, and excuse me for interrupting, I didn't know if you were done, as we move forward in the region, and since you are part of the finance group or audit group that looks at this, are we going to see a similar trend, you think, or are we going to try to look at having moving more dollars through the system earlier on, where we're not necessarily having dollars still left into the county that will have to be transferred at a later date? I know that's something we haven't really talked about, but at the governance level, but maybe as part of the admin group and part of your group, what type of long-term discussions are you contemplating on how, you know, we might look at this? And I guess the only reason that I'm asking the question is, for an outside entity looking at this, would they understand? We can say this, we can, you know, talk about, you know, this is where we are, but, you know, sometimes it's important that we can make sure that other people looking at that fully can understand exactly where we are and why, you know, we're doing what we're doing.
The way, this is the first year this has done, been done this way, first of all. The way that we are calculating the regional payment, the transfer to the region, is by looking at the ending fund balance actual for last year, then adding any revenues that are county revenues and reducing, or then taking out the next year's expenditures, so FY16 expenditures, and the balance then is what's going to the region. Deb and I have had conversations about this. I don't think that this is something that you can project at the beginning of a fiscal year. When we put the FY16 budget together, that was one of the things that I included in it, was a over $3 million payment to the region, because that's what we're collecting in taxes. That got lowered because we don't know until we're well into the process of the next budget year as to what we are actually going to be responsible to send. So I don't know what conversations they've had at the regional level. I know in the fiscal portion, I've requested and talked about some variations of calculating this, but I don't know where we're at with that.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'll just add, can you hear me okay?
No.
I'll just add that I think we're going to see this process stabilize as we go forward.
Mm-hmm.
As the region further develops and we have some age on it. What we're doing for fiscal year 16 is all service claims, so any services provided by an agency and billed to the region, that's all going to be billed through our fiscal agent. So that's one of the big changes. Admin claims will still be paid for by each individual county, so that's why we need to hold some dollars back in order to meet the demands of those administrative claims. Going into fiscal year 16, there are no equalization dollars, and as Lisa indicated, those dollars went to the region anyway, but there are no equalization dollars, and it's questionable as to whether or not there will be any federal dollars. This year we received social services block grant dollars. I think we have one more payment yet that's questionable whether we'll get that or not. Those dollars didn't go to the region. Those went to the individual counties, and they are required to at least pay that amount to the region. So that's included in what we're transferring to the region. So what that leaves us with are our local property tax dollars, so the $3 million that we're capped at. And so the region does need to work through as to how any of those dollars would be transferred during fiscal year 16, because we're not going to need all of those dollars to pay claims locally, because most of those dollars go towards our services and we're
right.
not.
And just the administrative costs that we're going to pull out of that $3 million. But it seems to me, Deb, as I think you're alluding to, as we go through time, this is going to get more and more clear. We know we're going to keep collecting the roughly $3 million.
Correct.
We're going to have a decent idea of what our administrative costs are going to be going forward. This has just been a squirrely couple years in that we've got all these reserve funds, which, by the way, let me just say, are not going to be there very long if the state doesn't equalize, which they're not going to next year. But if they choose not to equalize in the future, we're going to burn through those reserve funds, and we're going to be in really dire financial position as a region. But at the end of the day, it just seems to me that we're going to have that $3 million coming in, and X percent of that is going to go toward administrative cost, a fairly predictable number year in and year out, and the rest of it ultimately is going to go to the region to provide services. So it seems to me this is going to get easier and clearer. It's just these couple years have been really complex, and this year is hitting us as hard as anything as we take the dollars we have in our ending fund balance for mental health and transfer a huge majority of it over to the region.
Correct.
So.
And Wayne, going back to your question about, you know, will the public understand this, or it's just some, we have to continue educating. Each region is doing this a little bit differently. And so I think it's just important that if people ask, we keep educating them on, you know, we have a formula and each county in our region is required to follow that formula that the region has come up with. And if you remember last year, we sent in a couple of payments. I mean, there was a different formula because we were just getting the regional pooled account established. Now, this year, we have this formula where the fund's been established, so now we're going to dump more money into it so we can pay those services.
Well, and just the fact that you're paying all the services through the fiscal agent, which is Madison, tells me that those dollars, so we had been paying all those service costs.
Right.
The biggest thing that I would underscore for the public and for anybody else is, we're not talking about new dollars here. We're not talking about new expenditures. We're talking about where it's paid from.
Right.
And so it's dollars that we have either collected or will collect specifically for mental health services that traditionally Story County has paid. Mm-hmm. Now Story County doesn't pay it anymore. We pay who pays it. So
as part of the education, is this the kind of thing that can be added to the agenda, or has it been added to, like, our provider agencies? You know, there's regular times that they meet, and whether to me, I think it would probably, if there are concerns or questions, it's probably going to come from people who work directly with people in this field. And I'm just curious as to whether you think at some point it would be worthwhile to have that type of discussion as part of the agenda, just for, you know, additional information.
Are you suggesting for the governing board's agenda?
No.
Okay.
Because we don't get a lot of public here for our meeting.
Right.
So I'm thinking of I don't know whether they meet monthly or quarterly, but the provider agency groups that usually come together.
We have the regional advisory group that meets quarterly. I think their meeting's coming up in June, so I can certainly pass
that would
along.
Be a good one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, too. And I think they've already touched upon this in a prior meeting.
Okay.
The other thing is the agencies that are affected by where they send their service claims, when their contracts go out, there's going to be a letter explaining that goes out with that.
Good.
So they know, and that's not to say that we won't see some claims just automatically come to us because people are used to that being the process.
Sure.
But I think we'll get there in time and trying to get everybody educated on how this is going to work in the future. It's just one of the efficiencies, I think, within the region to have those claims paid out of our fiscal agent office.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
All right. So that takes us through the basics. So we need to get to the public hearing. But before we get to the public hearing, I know I have a couple questions on where we are. So this is the amounts that we published.
Mm-hmm.
We can lower from these amounts, but we can't go up from these amounts.
Right.
And I really have two areas that I want us to discuss before we move on. And like I say, then that might help before we get to the public hearing. One is the treasurer's revenues. There have been some question back and forth on is that an appropriate amount? And so I want you to take us through that. And the second one is the expenditure request from the sheriff's office. I want to go through those because I've got just a couple areas that I really think it's important that we talk about. So let's start with the treasurer and the revenues. Take us through that, Lisa.
Revenues are projected when we put budgets together. The revenues in two areas in the treasurer's department are interest and investments and auto registration fees that come in typically substantially higher than budgeted. You know, I think we've done a better job countywide of trying to budget as close to actuals as possible, but revenues are still one of those things that everybody's a little nervous about. Quite frankly, amendment to revenues helps the county with fund balances. It doesn't, there's no penalties if you don't reach those. There's no ramifications if you go over. Revenues are not something that at the big picture level are even noticed from the Department of Management or anybody that reviews our budget. It's the expenditures that they focus on.
So what you've presented here is strictly a look at where we are today
currently
in those revenues
basically,
and what you actually project us ending up.
Correct. So,
and if we don't hit it, is it any detriment at all to Treasurer Tweet if we're wrong, if
no.
we don't hit it?
No.
Okay.
None whatsoever. And quite frankly, interest on investments, you know, they go into that department, but they're county interest, they're county revenues. So
no real ramification to the treasurer's office. We're just if we were to pass this, we're just trying to get our budget closer to where we're actually going to end
right.
up.
Yeah.
And philosophically, if I may say, it's part of the discussion that we had at the beginning of each budget season when we asked people to take a look at their projected revenues and expenses to try to anticipate as close to actuals as possible.
Correct.
And in a way to look at the overall budgeting process. So I think from that philosophy, this is very consistent to what we're trying to do, realizing that, you know, there's always going to be a little swag one way or the other.
Right.
There are some unknowns out there. You know.
And quite frankly, I look at all the revenues that the county brings right. in when I look at budget amendments. I look at where we're at on all the revenues
right.
so that I can get closer to where I think the fund balances are going to be.
Right.
Well, I look at this as Lisa doing exactly what she's supposed to do, and we're doing what we're supposed to do. This isn't something new. We didn't come up with this yesterday.
Right.
This is no reflection on the treasurer's ability or the authority to run her office the way she sees fit. It's a revenue estimate.
Correct.
And you've done a great job of tracking those over the last several months. You do it every year, and your projection is that we're going to come in a little higher with our revenues than we had thought a year ago.
Correct.
So.
Okay. I wanted to make sure we talked about it because I know there were some questions coming
right.
out of
I was never asking
3 weeks ago. There were questions, and so I wanted to make sure we talked about it.
Yep.
So moving on, most of the expenditures make sense to me, and most of the expenditure requests from the sheriff make sense to me. There's a couple that don't, but let's just run through real quick the ones that absolutely make sense to me. And see if you guys have an area that doesn't make sense to you. So it's a $95,000 total request to increase the budget. The first one that makes sense to me is uniforms and equipment. That was something that actually we talked about at the end of FY14. It was stuff that was ordered at the end of 14 but didn't get here until 15. So those dollars, while we didn't encumber them, in my mind, they kind of carried through from 14 to 15. And so there's just over $12,000 in uniforms and equipment from things that were ordered in 14, didn't get here, didn't get paid for until 15. That one makes sense to me unless you guys have an issue with it. Second one that makes sense to me is communications. There's a couple components in there. One is the fact that our new phone system is costing us more than we projected across the board. And so we've got lots and lots of different areas in this budget where we've got departments and offices that have had to increase based on that overage. And the second one that is really hitting the sheriff hard is this new tower that we put on the building. The sheriff absorbed $15,000 in costs in that. There was no way to project that. And so that's a total of $31,800 that I think just makes sense to me based on those two items. And so I don't have any questions about that one, unless you guys do. Education and training, you know what? Absolutely, we've got a Citizens Academy participant who is in need of, who has hearing issues and is in need of a sign language interpreter. Yeah, that's not something we budgeted for. Okay, I can live with that getting in there. So then the ones I have questions on are overtime, medical care, and equipment rent and maintenance. And I'll just start at the bottom. Equipment rent and maintenance, I believe there's money in the budget to handle what's left for equipment rent and maintenance. Lisa, do you see something different than that?
Right now they're at 52% of the year, 53% of the year. It's $1,900. So, yeah.
And what is the equipment rent and
77,000 is the 77.
And they've used 50% of it. I don't see where we need to amend in $1,900 to a line item that we're only at 50% on. That's the first one that I have a question on. Second one is medical care. Hey, and I understand this. We pay what we pay. I understand we've got some bills in with the Story County Medical Center right now. But still looking at that line item, I think we're okay there. Lisa, walk us through that one.
The budget for that line item is $274,700, and the contract for the medical care that we have through the company is $244,300. So there was a $30,000 beginning of the year. There was $30,000 extra for any types of things that came up at that point in time. We're also at 75% of the year on that budget, which or in that line, and we're at 82%. Of the year.
And at the end of the day, if we miss on this one, we'll carry some of those bills over into
next fiscal.
And I mean, that's the key that for me to
we're going to pay what we're
to look
pay.
At it. This again is an unknown. If we incur greater costs within the next 3 months, then those dollars are going to have to be paid. And that's but what we're trying to basically say is that if there is the capacity based on where we are now, then we wouldn't necessarily need to amend additional dollars toward that, knowing full well that if there is the added expenditure that comes in and we don't have that, we would carry that over into the next
fiscal
year.
That's exactly right, Wayne.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
But that would be strictly on the medical expenses.
That was on the medical. Now, let's talk about, let's go back to the original contract again. Is this consistent? And of course, the only other one. I mean, I start all the others that you'd already mentioned. The only other question that I, you know, had again was where we were within the budget in terms of the ability to not go over in those particular line items. How are we? Are you able to take a snapshot in terms of prior maintenance agreements, prior things, expenditures, looking at a projected overall cost? My question is probably not as clear in terms of what happens again in this case if we exceed the dollar amount that is budgeted. What would be the recourse?
In which line item are we talking about?
The last one.
Oh, the equipment.
Yeah, we're at 52. We're now. You said 77,000.
We need to not exceed. We need to not spend 48% of that line item in the last 2 months of the year.
So.
And understand that the dollars appropriated. They would. If the dollars get spent, they get spent. They go over in that line item. They can't go over bottom line.
Right, right. Yes,
total,
right.
The total budget at the bottom line. They
right,
can't go over.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
But we don't need to increase either that line item or the bottom line when we're only at 52% in that line item.
I'm looking at, you know, the $1,900 unbudgeted on that maintenance agreement, and we're at 52% of the year. That's what I'm looking at right now, and there doesn't seem to be any other unbudgeted items there.
Right.
Okay.
So that's that one. And then the final one that I have to talk about is overtime, and it simply is, Lisa, I need you to refresh my memory. I think I remember our conversation. I know it was 15 months ago that we were having this conversation, but walk me through where we were on the sheriff's original request for FY15, where we ended up coming to as a board and what our original budget amount was and what the difference was there.
The original request from the sheriff's office for the FY15 budget was for $102,000 in overtime pay.
Okay.
Okay. Went through the budget work sessions. At the end of the budget work sessions, the direction given to the sheriff was, would you look at three specific line items? In your mind, there are three specific line items he should look at. You didn't tell him to go look at three specific line items, but in your mind, there were three specific line items he should look at and cut $12,000 to $15,000 out of his total request.
And his total request was what?
$7.6
million. $7.6 million, and we requested $12,000 to $15,000 out of that.
Right.
And the sheriff gets to take it from wherever he chooses.
Correct.
Where did he choose to take it from?
Overtime. He reduced overtime by $11,000. So the new overtime starting the FY15 budget was $91,000.
And we didn't request that he lower overtime.
You said lower your budget by $12,000 to $15,000.
Out of $7.6 million.
Correct.
I have an issue with the sheriff, who is an elected official, autonomous, runs his office and does a really good job running his office. But I have an issue with him choosing to reduce his budget in this line item when it wasn't requested, but then coming back and asking us to not only make up what he reduced, but triple what he reduced at the end of the year. That's my issue with this line item.
Well, the only concern that I would have, and obviously this is, goes before, you got a public hearing. This is just to be start of the conversation.
Start of the conversation.
Is that I believe that we should request the sheriff, if he wants to come to us, and then discuss, you know, his rationale other than, you know, what is currently here, that we provide that opportunity. I know Connie's here from the office there and so forth. I don't know if she's prepared to kind of, you know, speak on this particular issue at this time, but I just believe that should be the process. He should hear what our concerns are as well as we have an opportunity again to talk about this. If I'm just going to put myself in his position for a little bit to be a devil's advocate.
Sure, absolutely.
If I'm asked, you know, to reduce X number of dollars, which we rightfully requested and felt that we saw areas that, you know, it could be done, and we didn't want to go line item by line item, but we all had a targeted dollar figure, then the discretion to decide where to reduce certainly was left up to him. And so if at some point there were some changes in personnel, et cetera, and that particular area was going to be lower than anticipated, then he's either got to have those dollars from some other item,
mm-hmm.
Or request additional dollars. So what we're basically, from what I'm thinking that I'm hearing us say, is that we believe somewhere within his budget he could absorb, you know, the request that is being proposed in this particular line item. So am I missing that point?
No, you're not missing it from my perspective.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And your comment about him having, you know, having the ability to come and talk to you about it, this is the public hearing. I've published the budget amendment.
Mm-hmm.
An action needs to be taken today.
Right.
We had the discussion 3 weeks ago.
Correct.
When we approved the publish date.
Okay.
And we've had conversations here about it since then. So, I mean, everybody's had notice that today's public hearing for the budget amendment.
Okay.
And
well, let me ask this question.
I'm not going to ask Connie to put herself.
No,
up.
I don't want her. I'm not trying to put.
I don't want her to speak for him, obviously, but I don't know
if she wanted
to comment at all, or whether there's been some discussion regarding this. I certainly understand, you know, the point of view that you're making and the consistency by what we have tried to do in the budgeting process throughout in this particular area. And at the end of the day, my question always comes is does it appear that within the dollars that have been allocated, that there is sufficient room to meet these anticipated costs? And, I mean, it would be the same as any other department that wanted to come back at a later time and ask, because this one is a little different. If you remember the part of the discussion that we had, we talked about unintended costs, that if we, during the budgeting process, you know, found that there was some additional cost above and beyond what we had anticipated, then they could come back to us, and then we would take a look at whether we could appropriate additional dollars. And so I'm not sure exactly where this fits into that discussion.
Where is the sheriff right now, total expenditures to available dollars?
End of April, overall, 82.25%, and we're at 81.3% of the year.
So he's right on. He's right on target. Yeah, and for me, Wayne, it is there is such a trust factor that has to exist between this board and every one of our elected officials as we build that budget. But it's a two-way street. It's trust that we as a board are going to be there for some unforeseen consequence, but it's also trust that you as the elected official are going to prudently put together a budget. And when the sheriff chose to take what I thought was a really reasonable $102,000 in overtime and reduce that, when that wasn't even one of the things we talked about during the budget work session, he chose to do that. He's an elected official. He chose to do that. But then to come back to us and say, oh, by the way, now we've got somebody who went out on FMLA. You know what? We got people who go out on FMLA in every department, every office, every year. I think there is dollars there to accommodate it. And I don't like the precedent sense. It's not fair to ask Connie about this because she wasn't there when we had the original conversation for the FY15 budget. But for me, it is the way we need to operate going forward. And I wanted to make sure I laid all of that out before we get to the public hearing in case there's somebody who wants to address it.
Good. I know I had concerns when that was the line item that he decided to cut was overtime, because it's unpredictable.
Well, it's unpredictable, and it was already less than we normally spent.
Right.
I mean, you look at what we normally spend in overtime. In fact, I don't think it was part of that budget year, but we have definitely had the conversation before. Are you sure you've got enough in overtime? Lisa, I know we've had that conversation. So that's just where I'm coming down. Lisa, anything to add before we open the public hearing?
I know.
Paul, Wayne, anything else before we get to public hearing?
No.
Okay. At this point, we will open the public hearing and ask if there is anybody who wishes to address the board on any of the conversation to this point. Public hearing is open. Yeah, Connie, come on up.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. You talked about the medical care. I'll go there first because I think that's the easier subject to speak of.
Sure.
The thing we are concerned with, and you had discussed that whatever we can't pay this year, we'll just carry over until the next FY. We want to avoid that because we know next FY, I'm sure you're aware that the state legislature has talked about making each agency responsible for their own inmate care before they actually come to the jail upon arrest. And it doesn't look like that's going to pass, so that's still going to be a burden on the Story County Sheriff's Office or Story County budget. And that's why we do not want to have to carry any expenses over to the next FY. That is what we were trying to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the purpose of that. We do not know what's going to happen in the next, obviously, 60 days. If inmates, we could have somebody that gets injured,
sure,
whatever, we don't know. So that is our feeling on that. On the overtime factor, yes, I was not here for the beginning of that. As Lisa, I know, knows, and I'm sure you do too, usually the sheriff's office has more turnover, and the salary line items can cushion mm-hmm. the overtime line items. You can either say fortunately or unfortunately, that has not happened this fiscal year. And we have had several people out on FMLA, which has caused overtime, and that's beyond our control. We've had a few deputies or officers have to have surgery, so they've been on an extended, you know, leave of absence. Those are things beyond our control. If you notice, and I don't know if you look at the different overtime within the divisions, dispatch was approved an extra person. And that overtime, since that extra person and those two people were trained, it is completely minimal mm-hmm. in dispatch as to the overtime dollars that are spent. It is amazing how much that's come down. The jail is having an issue just because of the FMLE problem. I also have looked at with personal day payout and comp time payout. Lisa and I discussed this, I think, after every pay period, where are we at? And usually the salaries or the line items can control that. And I had asked Lisa if she had put in for an amendment for the personal day payout because our salaries are so close. And she said she had not. And it looks like when I separate administrative costs versus operation costs, we're going to be about $50,000 to $60,000 over budget in the administration. And that is another reason why we are asking for that overtime, because we were not expecting all the things that have happened. So I completely understand what you three are saying, but I did want you to hear mm-hmm. why we had asked for that figure. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And I do agree with Connie. My calculations come to about the $50,000 short in their overall salaries.
And when I speak of overall, it was everything above the line, the shift diff, the taxable infringements, or all of that is part of the administration that I think of.
We're 50, and is overtime above the line as we calculate that? And we're about 50 over is what you figure, okay?
Yeah. So, thank you for your time.
Absolutely, thank you. Anybody else wishing to address the board on the resolution 1573? Going once? All right, we'll close the public hearing. Connie makes a good point. We have not seen the turnover this year that we've seen in previous years in the sheriff's office, and I actually think that's a good thing. I mean, I like some turnover. I think it's a good thing that we haven't seen as much this year in the sheriff's office, but it does mean that we don't have quite the same flexibility that we've had before. So I still believe that equipment rent and maintenance, we need to not put that in. That's $1,970. The medical care, I still think that we're going to get by, and worst case scenario, if we had to carry over a small amount, I think we're fine. So I'd like to pull out that $10,000. The 36.6 in overtime, I tend to look at the numbers, and Lisa, you help me through this, but I think that is much more than I think is actually needed in that line item. But I am willing to recognize that there was a reduction of $11,000 as we put together the initial budget in the overtime. And if we want to put that back in at this point, if that's what you guys want to do, I'd be comfortable with that. So that would reduce the 36.6 requested down to $11,000. And go from there. And then I just ask you, Lisa, as you look at the overall numbers, do you feel like it's attainable from where we are?
Yeah, your call.
I know it's our call. I'm just wondering how the numbers look to you.
Yeah, my calculations right now is they're going to be short about $51,000 overall in their salary line items, with the personal day payouts and all that taken into account. And of that, most of it's overtime. I mean, they're at $120,600 at the end of April. So that's already, $29,000 over the $91,000 budget.
Well, my question to you, Supervisor Sanders, would be, is there... knowing the $51,000 possibly is going to be short, is there a compromise of halving that $36,000 and still reducing the $10,000 and the $1,900, the two items that we definitely do feel is within this year's budget capacity to be able to maintain that? So what we would basically be doing would, rather than taking the full 36 down to 11, maybe looking at halving that amount.
Well, the answer is yes, Wayne, but I feel like I've already done that, and here's where I am right now. So the request is $95,825 total. Right? Total, right. Total. 95. That's and right. I'm suggesting that we reduce that request by $37,570. So that means we would be increasing the sheriff's budget by $58,255, if all my quick math is right here. And I think that $58,255 gets us where we need to be and gets the sheriff where he needs to be to adequately maintain his office. Lisa, thoughts on that?
Yes, I think you're accurate on because except for the medical care, everything else
has
already
been
paid
care.
For this year is my take on what's going on with the rest of the requests.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's what I'm suggesting, Wayne, is the compromise.
$15,000 has not been paid. The tower has not come out.
Right, the tower has still got to come in. Right.
So your math suggests that we would reduce it by $37,570, the published amount.
That is what I am suggesting to this board that I would like to do. Instead of $95,825, I would like to increase the sheriff's budget by $58,255.
I think it's a reasonable request. Again, the I don't have a problem. As I say, the one that's still I can't get my arms wrapped around is the overall impact of what the salary line items in the overtime, even though I know, again, it was certainly lowered from what historically we've had in previous years, questioning whether or not that was going to be an adequate dollar amount. The other two, I clearly can see that there is the capacity. I believe there is a capacity to carry that. So the $58,255 is not unreasonable. It's just that I'm putting myself in the position of the wearing two hats in a way.
Absolutely.
That if I was taking a look at the budget and I was considering all these parameters to deal with and recognizing that even though I had submitted a budget where I was anticipating that I wouldn't have this much cost in the overtime line item that we could probably exist and get by, and then I found out that I feel like I'm going to be short in that amount, then the obvious thing to do would be to come to us and request some additional dollars to make sure that that's not there. So that's the kind of position that I have. But based on what Lisa's telling me and what I'm hearing, what the discussion seems to say, is we still believe that there is still capacity in the bottom line to be able to make these things meet without going over and adding much more than the $58,000.
Yep. That you stated exactly how I see it, Wayne.
So we need a motion.
Yep.
I'm gonna make a motion that we approve resolution 1537 and reduce
73
and reduce the overall amount that was published by $37,570. Does that get you where you need to be? Is that okay?
I'll second the motion and I'll ask one discussion topic, Lisa. Based on all, I know you spent a lot of time going through this, and Rick, I appreciate, how carefully you work with her and look at these numbers and so forth, but you feel reasonably comfortable, based on prior history and where we are, that we have a reasonable, margin here, for him to be able to, maintain his office, as he sees fit.
Yeah, I mean, it appears to me as though,
right.
Like I said, I'm not, daily out there knowing what the,
right.
the orders, the bills,
right.
that kind of stuff are.
Right.
But that's my
right.
that's my appearance. Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Good.
Okay. Yeah, I'm completely confident that this gets us there. The one question I have that we'll just have to deal with is, will we be carrying any medical bills over? And
right.
that's going to be
right.
completely dependent
right.
on what
right.
comes in the rest
right.
of the year.
Right.
I think everywhere else we're going to
right.
be fine.
And I don't have a problem if we have to carry it over.
We'd prefer not
yeah,
to.
We'd prefer not
rightly
to.
Stated.
But if we do,
right.
We do. Right.
Further discussion? Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
I will support it. Aye.
And I'm an aye. So 1573 with the noted reduction of $37,570 passes. Lisa, I'll ask you to put that together for my signature.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much. Another public hearing item, consideration of proposed plan specifications, form of contract, and estimated cost of Hickory Grove Lake Watershed Improvements Phase 1, and setting a bid opening date of June 2nd, 2015. Mike Cox. Mike, thanks for sitting through all that.
You're welcome. Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, I got one more. Got an extra.
I've seen this already, but do I have 30 seconds?
Well, again, good morning.
Good morning.
We're finally ready to move forward. If you recall, several years ago, well, I shouldn't say several years ago, 2013, a watershed management action plan was approved for the Hickory Grove Lake watershed. That plan highlighted several corrective actions within the watershed, and our first step was to apply for grant funding to address what we consider phase one. We received that grant, or those grants, one from the Watershed Improvement Review Board and one from the Iowa Department of Natural Resources Lakes Program. And then in addition, we received some funding that is outlined in that grant budget worksheet that you have in front of you. At any rate, we have been working with an engineer on design of this first phase. The first phase includes stream bank stabilization, it includes livestock exclusion, grade stabilization, and then also it included septic improvements. Septic improvements, although were awarded, are not part of what we're requesting action from you today on. That was handled independently of this project. So what we are requesting approval on and authorization to go to bid on is the phase one project that is stream bank work, the fencing work, so cattle exclusion, and then a grade stabilization. We are requesting, let's see, just to take you through the timeline here, requesting to open bids or receive bids and open them on June 2nd and then to award bids on June 9th. Cost opinion. Engineering cost opinion for this comes in right at what was budgeted that you see represented in front of you. That does take into consideration those two grant funding sources as well as outside funds from soil and water conservation. And let's see, I guess that was the only other outside funding source. This does anticipate, the cost opinion does anticipate that we would have to utilize those funding sources identified in columns 4 and 2 that you see in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
So with that having said, one of the other things that we have been working on, all of this work is taking place on private property. And you'll see later on in the agenda that I'll come back with another item for approval of or acceptance of an easement that would authorize and protect this work in perpetuity. That is ready to go, so that's not an impediment here. Permits have been received. That's not so we're ready to move on that front, too. We're still anticipating a construction of this summer. So if we award bids on the 9th, we would anticipate a notice to proceed within 2 to 3 weeks after that date of award.
Thank you, Mike. Questions for Mike?
No, I was at the Conservation Board meeting, and when this was discussed and thoroughly vetted by the board, as well as Mike's taking us through this. And again, this has been a long-term project. This has been something that we've been trying to get accomplished over series of years, and feel that we, at least the Conservation Board, feel that they're kind of now at that point that we're ready to go out and hopefully receive bids and get this project completed so that we could move forward with the Hickory Grove Lake Area Improvement. So I felt very good about where we were and how this was presented to the board, and the board did recommend approval and to follow this on to the supervisors for our consideration.
Questions, Paul?
Nope.
All right, we'll open the public hearing and ask if there's anybody wishing to address this item. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll close the public hearing and turn to the board for consideration.
I would move approval of the specification forms here and set June 2nd as opportunity to receive bids for this improvement process.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Mike, anything to add? Wayne?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Passes. June 2nd, we will have a bid opening. Moves us to additional items. Consideration of Resolution 1574, as Markley is wont to do when we amend a budget, she actually wants us to appropriate some dollars.
I'm so mean like that, aren't I? As you notice, it's a appropriations are for the expenditures. As I said earlier, there are no such thing as appropriations for revenues. This appropriation resolution will be changed, obviously, to reflect what you the action of the a budget amendment. So the overall appropriation additions would be Board of Supervisors $14,500, Treasurer $10,000 for communication, Sheriff $58,255. Animal Control $15,000. That's mainly, that's all coming from her Friends of Animals Fund.
Mm-hmm.
General County Betterment $50,420, which is the airport and a little leftover from Animal Control vehicle at the beginning of the fiscal year. Engineer $265,000. Veterans Affairs $500. He had requested that he move $500 to marketing that he got as a donation. Conservation Board has requested a lowering of $340,000 to $203,000, mainly their grants not happening this year, but next year, such things. Environmental Health, $24,291, which is also grant related. IRVM is being reduced by $21,180. Community Life is being reduced by $392,853. Facilities Management increased by $55,310. Planning and Development increased by $10,250. Mental Health increased by $3,785,393. Juvenile Court lowered by $5,045. And Countywide Services increased by $407,044. Of those, you have departments you have not 100% appropriated, okay, which are not elected officials' offices, but they are some of the other offices. This amendment will give the following 100%. Animal Control, Conservation, Environmental Health, IRVM, COP, Facilities, Mental Health, and Juvenile Court.
Questions for Lisa?
No.
Okay.
Seems pretty simple.
Pretty straightforward.
The way we like it. I'll move approval of Resolution 1574
with the reduction.
As amended, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Second.
We have a motion and a second on 1574 as amended on the sheriff's line specifically. Further discussion? Toot?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes. Here, Lisa, I'll give you these two because I know you've got to redo them before I sign them. Thank you. Good work. Next item is discussion and consideration of Story County entering into a 28E agreement with Franklin and Hardin counties for the mental health advocate services.
Good morning.
Hi, Deb.
Morning.
Just a little background on why we're looking at this agreement. Our previous advocate, Carl Schout, unfortunately had a brief illness and passed away about a month ago as a result of that. And so we're looking for someone to replace him and provide those services to adults that are on court commitment and have specific kinds of things that they have to meet in terms of that commitment. And when committed, they are appointed an advocate. So we are in need of that level of service. We have used Mary Swartz in the past for different cases, and Mary is currently the advocate for Franklin and Hardin counties. We had had some conversations with her in those two counties at the time we found out about Carl's passing, and so and she's agreeable to step in and serve Story County. So Hardin and Franklin counties had a standing 28E agreement. That agreement now before you adds Story County into that agreement. Mary would still have her main office out of Eldora, but would come to Story County to meet with clients and meet with providers and family members to ensure those services are being provided. Just a caveat to this, right now we're still in a situation where even though this agreement is being considered, it is the chief judge who appoints mental health advocates in counties. That does change come July 1st due to the passage of some legislation that Representative Lisa Heddens had spearheaded this session. As of July 1st, advocates become county employees, and that does bring on some additional things that we'll need to look at and that we are going to be working on with the region, because it will be regional mental health dollars that fund the mental health advocates. So I can't stress strong enough that that's important for the county boards, for our member counties to be working with the region to kind of map out what the options are and how this will proceed after July 1st.
Well, this seems to me to be a great first step along those lines for then the region to weigh in on and see where we're going. As I understand it, Hardin has already passed this 28E, and Franklin will deal with it on Monday.
Next Monday,
right.
Correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Questions for Deb?
Yeah. No, it had been discussed at our last Regional Governance Board meeting, and then there was also Deb and I sat in along with Boone County, and we started talking again about the mental health advocate and looking at coming up with a task force was put together, looking at coming up with some consistency and guidance that we'd like to have adopted by each region. And I think once that's been formalized and approved by the governance board, hopefully it'll go back to each member county to approve that direction. So you will hear more about, how this will all play out, in the near future as the committee comes together to put this final touches on some of the changes. And hopefully, we hope that maybe there will be some consistency statewide in terms of how other regions will approach this, because this is a new change for us, something that we've been advocating for some time. But I do think it's a step in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And appreciate the work Deb has done on this, working with Lisa and our representative to bring us to this point.
Okay.
I'd move approval of the 28E agreement with Franklin and Hardin counties for mental health advocate services.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. The 28E agreement passes, and we'll wait for Franklin to deal with it on Monday.
All right.
Thanks.
Good. Thank you.
Next item is consideration of a performance agreement slash conservation easement from Robert Dean Jamison and Joni Sue Jamison. Mike, this is part of that project we were just talking about.
Part of that project. Yep. This is the easement from the landowner that allows us to come on their property, make these improvements, and then to protect those surviving title.
And the important thing was, is I learned what perpetual meant.
There you go.
And I wouldn't this was not before. So.
Well, we don't want to get in there and do the work and then have to deal with it again because we didn't maintain it.
Right. Good. Well, I would move approval of the performance agreement for the conservation easement from Robert Dean Jamison and Joni Sue Jamison.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion. Clinton.
Aye.
Two.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Passes. Thanks, Mike. Next is discussion and consideration for the scope of work between IDOT and the Story County Treasurer's Office for replacing existing T1 to a dedicated wireless connection. Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning. Barb Steinbeck, Information Technology.
And I'm Heather Thompson with the DOT.
We're bringing you another networking project that's a benefit to Story County and will not cost us money, so I like bringing these kind of projects to you. But I'll let Heather explain a little bit about what she's trying to do for us for the Treasurer's Department.
Basically, the Treasurer's Office right now is connected back to the DOT, back to our ARTS database, which is registration and titling, via a frame relay T1. Frame relay is a very old technology.
Mm-hmm.
So CenturyLink is no longer supporting those. So we've been, in all the counties, we've been replacing them. In Story County, we have a unique opportunity. Our ITS group, which is Intelligent Transportation System, they've been installing fiber all along the I-80 corridor up 35, and they have a fiber link between basically 19th Street all the way over to Boone along Highway 30. Well, we have a fiber going up to that 19th Street handhole, so what we want to do is extend that fiber to the Justice Center, and then Transcor is going to install wireless between here and the Justice Center, which gives the DOT an entire link. It goes directly back to us. We have no telco to deal with. We own that fiber the entire way. It's all going to be paid for out of DOT project funds, so there's no financial impact to you guys, and it gives the Treasurer's Office of for their ARTS database and for their printers back to our database. So.
Okay.
And an added benefit that I'm excited about, there is a little square of cement just outside the back door to the Justice Center that we've had to dig up three times, and facilities, you know, put cement back on it, and then we dig it up again. So this time the DOT will be putting in a handhole, so we won't have to go through that again. So it'll be a benefit to us to do that.
Outstanding.
We're going to work with Transcor out of Des Moines and also Communication Innovators, who has done fiber work for Story County before. And they're going to put in a permanent location there where they can get into the building there. They're going to be putting about a three-foot tower on top of the building out of the Justice Center. There's a path going in there actually for their cable TV connection. We're going to use the same path. That way we don't have to do any intrusive work there. They're going to work. I know that the judges are pretty sensitive to breaking up that concrete. They're going to want that done probably either way before they start or after. And Transcor has no problem. Communication Innovators said the same thing. They'll go ahead and get that done. And then here we're going to use one of the existing tower mounts that is on the tower that the sheriff's office just put in. So, and we'll use a path that's already in there as well. So.
Okay. Questions?
The only question is why was that not referenced in the scope of work, which just kind of indicates that this is just a connection between the treasurer's office, but yet, you know, we do see that the Justice Center will be involved in that because of how the linkage of the T1. So just from disclosure and standpoint, was there a reason that was not needed, was listed? You see, when you look at the consideration scope of work, you know, but yet when I look at the documentation, you know, you can see that is also going to involve, unless I'm looking at the wrong thing, you know, I'm looking at the wireless connectivity design for the county administration building the Sheriff's Department with the Iowa DOT network design.
Yeah, and the issue there, as I understand it, Wayne, and I'll just ask Barb and Heather to correct me if I'm wrong, it is we got the fiber, DOT has the fiber that they can easily get to the Justice Center, but we've got to be able to get the Treasurer's Office to communicate to the start of that fiber, and the best way we've identified to do that, well, the best way to do it would be if we had a straight fiber connection all the way through.
We did actually look into that. The one main problem when we have this all over the state is getting across the railroad.
Exactly.
We just can't
okay.
do it.
It's and so we're going to go wirelessly from the Treasurer's Office over to the Justice Center simply because that's where DOT's fiber is going
okay.
to touch us.
All right. Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. If there's no other questions, I would sure entertain a motion.
I'd move approval of Move approval of the scope of work between the DOT and Story County Treasurer's Office.
Second.
Have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Barb, anything else we need to be aware of?
I do. In talking with Cal earlier this morning, he suggested that maybe I should bring this to the other members of the Tower Committee because we did work so long and hard on this project. Just to let them know. It doesn't impact them at all, but I think it's courtesy to let them know that this is what we're planning to do. And then the other thing, I've also asked Heather for complete and thorough documentation of this because we've run into that problem in the past, and I don't want to be scratching our heads and digging through file cabinets again if we need to make changes in the future.
And Heather, no issue with that?
Absolutely.
All right.
Okay.
Super.
Great.
Further discussion? Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes. Thank you very much. We appreciate DOT doing this. Consideration of establishing a Story County employee community garden using the old annex building lot. Matt and Christy, good morning.
Good morning. Yes, Matt Boyk, Story County GIS coordinator.
Christy Mackey, EAC representative.
So I'd first like to thank you for giving us the opportunity to come and speak with you about an employee garden. I guess I'll give you kind of a little background and just kind of my thinking. I kind of stole the idea, actually, from a GS coordinator at the City of Johnston. They established a small community garden for employees by their city hall. So that's kind of the idea that I would like to do and take that here and using some of the green space or that open space where the building once stood. I think it ties in with a lot of the initiatives at Story County. There's a health and wellness aspect, environmentally conscious stewardship, land stewardship idea. Obviously, Story County has a great history and rich agricultural history. There's also been some recent initiatives for local food systems. I know Leanne Harder has been involved in that in the past. So I guess my plan was for Story County employees to bring their own plants. The county is not going to furnish anything. They bring their own plants, care for them in the area. We have a plan to till it up. I believe Christy was going to let us borrow,
maybe.
Or maybe, hopefully.
Yeah.
we'll be able to till up the area and fence it off and allow the people, the employees to grow their own plants, water it, take care of it, weed it. That's obviously, weeds are going to grow. I'm almost positive. I've also spoke with Cal, Facilities Management Director, and he doesn't have a problem with it. He just is concerned. He doesn't want to be, he doesn't want to devote his staff to pulling weeds in, a couple months down the road. And I've assured him that won't happen. Let's see. Also, when I sent out that email, I'm sure you guys got it, just to kind of get some feelers out there. Carol Williams from Story County Conservation already said that she has a few tomato plants to even donate. So if there's some people that want to take those over, don't have a tomato plant, and they just are excited about getting involved, they should have that opportunity to do that as well. And I should say it's for vegetables, and then also people want to grow flowers or something too. It's if they don't have an area in their home or they just want, something to kind of keep an eye on, just keep make the workplace a little more exciting, kind of track the progress of the garden. That's kind of the goal there. And I've also, Christy had sent an email to the EAC committee.
Right.
And
no one really had any problem with it.
they didn't really want EAC to take the lead on it. They wanted it to be more employee by employee. Whoever wanted to participate could. Sure. It's all kind of last minute right now.
Sure.
So, you know, maybe next year
You're getting to the core of my concern. So I like a lot about this concept. What I really struggle with, Matt, is weeds are going to grow. If it's not cared for, it's going to turn into an eyesore. There needs to be no public resources at all other than the ground itself put into this. Just because I don't think that's an appropriate use of public resources. But there has to be somewhere that the buck stops that's getting this done. If it's employee by employee, then who is policing it, for lack of a better term, when somebody's not, you know, they have this space and they're not doing a good job taking care of it and it's getting out of hand. What's going to happen is we're going to have to send Cal in with facilities to do something about it, and then it becomes public resources. And so my concern is, if the EAC was willing to be the entity that was going to monitor, police it, have its own rules and regulations, I'd be a lot more inclined to go down that road. I'm just back to what Christy said. This feels kind of last minute to me, and I don't know that we have all our ducks in a row, because my primary concern is that we go over there and we get something great started, and then people lose interest and a few people aren't taking care of things, and then all of a sudden it just really starts to look bad over there, which we're not going to tolerate. We're going to have to do something about. But I don't think it's our position to go employee by employee and say, now, wait a minute, you haven't weeded your area over there.
Well, the bottom line is while they didn't want to take the lead, there's got to be a group, a committee identified who basically says, yes, we're going to take the responsibility to do these things. And if for some reason a individual or whatever is not available, somebody else is going to be able to step up to the plate, because as Supervisor Sanders is saying, that this is not to be something that the facilities should be able to redirect their employees. This should be employee-driven. And what's encouraging about this is I just came back from Savannah last week, and I heard a presentation from the Blue Zone director that has been going around the country promoting Blue Zone designations. And since Ames, of course, has done this, I think in 2013, community gardens was really a topic of discussion and was, again, something that individuals can take pride in, and it does help towards this whole concept of wellness, because you begin to eat healthier foods, and that's, again, part of the process. So I like the process. My question, again, to the committee would be, would it be appropriate at this point to kind of give a tentative idea of the concept and then have you guys come back to us clearly with people who have stepped up to the plate and said, yes, this is how we're going to do it. This is a committee that's, you know, willing to work on this, et cetera. And we move forward. And then the last thing is I like okra, but I don't know anything okra, but I don't know anything about planting it. Can somebody show me how to plant some okra out there? Because then I would be right at home. Then you could get me out there to help clean it up.
We'll keep it on the list of options.
I'll speak for me personally, and you guys can do with it what you want. I would be inclined to support something like this if the EAC were going to take the responsibility for the administration. How do you assign the plots? Who gets them? What happens? EAC was going to have ultimate authority over any of that. They were going to have responsibility for the upkeep if something wasn't getting done. Then all of a sudden, I think you'll get me rapidly moving on board. I'm not going to support something that's just kind of, oh, we've got this space. Every employee go, you know, stake your claim and good luck to you, and we'll deal with it down the road. Just because I think it puts this board and the county in a really potentially tough position. I'd fully support EAC if they feel like that's something for the employees that you guys can administer. I could get behind that.
What about the option of a new committee forming? like a, you know, if you want to be.
Yeah, like an employee garden, whatever you call it. Yeah.
I would say if the EAC chose to form a subcommittee to administer this, for me, our relationship is with the EAC.
Right. Right.
And it feels to me like we're getting too deep in if we are the ones who are starting to form a committee. So I would want our relationship with the EAC to take precedent. And then EAC, if the EAC chooses to take this on, take it on and do with it what it sees fit. I mean, that's just my view. Paul, I don't know if you're seeing something
a lot different. I can support it. I'm in support of the idea. As long as the EAC or a subcommittee from the EAC is willing to take responsibility for it. Because if it does turn into an eyesore, we're not going to have any choice but to tell Cal, you know, send his guys over there with a tiller and till it back up and seed it to grass, and then we're done with it. So, and that's my only concern with community gardens is at some point in about mid-August, they start to look like crap because they've gotten what they want out of them other than the tomatoes, and then they're done with them. So, and I don't want to see that happen right across the street.
So I'd ask if we could send it back to the EAC. You guys have a full conversation, and if you don't like it, no problem. We'll just leave it like it is. If the EAC has interest in it, then just put together a plan, and let's come back and let's have the real conversation about going forward. And, Matt, hopefully we're giving you enough. I'm really interested in doing it. I just want to see all the details flushed out.
Right. Yep, I understand. Yep.
Right. Okay?
Right. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Good. We need no action if that's the way we're going.
Great.
So we'll just move on unless you guys. Thank you, guys.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Departmental reports, conservation. Mike. Hi.
All right. Well, first off, thank you for your earlier actions this morning. It is still morning. First update is on Dakin's Lake. A couple punch lists have been developed, and so we're waiting on contractor to complete those. Excuse me, some of the items on there are low-hanging fruit that have to be done prior to opening, and so we still haven't set a solid opening date. We're anticipating still opening by the holiday weekend. You know, we expect that we'll still be able to do that. We have been very busy on site trying to get that to happen. So I want to thank, we had about, the Colonesco School District brought out about 200 kids a couple weeks ago, and the children planted over 200 trees in about half a day, and so that was amazing. Really appreciative for the teachers and the school district for supporting us. It's one of those things that now every one of those children that were out there can say, you know, hey, we have a stake in this park, and that's my tree, or those are my trees, and we planted those. And so maybe they'll be a little more, over the years, a little more interested in maintaining the park and helping with it, taking a little bit of pride of ownership of that facility. So wonderful that we were able to work with the school district to have that happen. Today, as we speak, the playground, the remaining items of the playground are being installed. So some slides and swings are being installed right now. Other than that, you know, it's all seeded. It's for the most part all green. The roads are done. The punch list items are really building items. Like I mentioned, some electrical issues and some plumbing issues that need to get resolved, some masonry issues, etc. So some things like that that still need to happen. But all in all, it looks like a different park today than it did a couple weeks ago. And if you have the opportunity to go up and swing by, take a look, that would be great. We are planning on a, quote, soft opening. In other words, not a big celebration to kick it off, to open it. We are looking at a celebration a couple weeks into it. So you'll be hearing from me on some potential dates for doing a quote grand opening or park dedication ceremony in June. So that's the plan. it's coming along nicely. It's a lot of work to get it going, and but it's a beautiful facility, so I encourage you to get up there and take a look. So you'll be happy with it.
Is that one of the first things? See if your microphone's still on.
Is your mic still on?
It's on. It's on. It's green. Sorry.
Just remind me, as I look back, this is one of the first conversations you and I ever had, right? Was talking about
right
after you were hired. Yeah.
That's right.
You're going to have to remind me of that whole deal before we get to the grand opening.
Yeah.
This has been a fun process. I'm glad we're finally near the end.
Very good. Next, Hickory Grove Sewer. You know that that's been something that's been on the CIP plan and been discussed for a number of years. That was something that was always planned to be in the hopper right after Dakin's. So it's actually working out that way. I expect to get proposed agreement from Central Iowa Water to do the construction of the sewer system from Twin Anchors out to Hickory Grove this summer. So expect to move forward with that. It's a fairly big project. We're potentially looking at some other cost share partners with it. We do have most of the funding available in the reserve fund. But if we can get some of these cost share partners or this one in particular on, then that's a significant aid in moving this forward. So that's very nice.
Is there any possibility of private landowners wherever the line goes, if there's a possibility that they could hook onto it?
There is that possibility, yes, and I've discussed that. Now, typically, Central Iowa Water doesn't do that with sewer. They do it with water connections and not with sewer connections. However, they are willing to work with us on that and add that into the agreement. That if someone does hook on within, I forget the time, I think it's 3 to 5 years after initial construction, if they do hook on, then will be credited back a portion of the costs. What I am frankly very hopeful about is that the mobile home park right across from the park, that they be an initial partner with this. So there seems to be some positive energy in that direction, and good. So that'll be a significant cost savings for the county. Let's see, the research park, I guess, next. Last we discussed it at this group was when the presentation, we didn't have the land description done yet. We are still moving forward with identifying that land. We do not have it described yet, so henceforth, you haven't seen that come back forward. But we are still working on that.
I've got a meeting on my calendar for tomorrow morning. Are you in that one?
Correct. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Mike, may I just throw out a thought that I picked up in this conference? You know, when you talk about the Blue Zone designation in the city of Ames, and I'm sure Iowa State would be interested. And, you know, Wachovia has mentioned the need for like 240, 250 additional parking spots. And so when I asked this one director about that, I said, you know, had they ever thought about, you know, if that was moved and clearly outside a way where those employees had to walk and commute to the buildings, with the idea that you are trying to promote health and wellness, and we wouldn't have to give up all of that parking spot. I don't know logistic wise if there are other areas, you know, nearby that could accommodate that, but I don't know. I know with the trails and everything that we're talking about, there's going to be amenities for outdoor recreation and so forth, but I don't know if we've ever thought about, you know, other than you were talking about impervious surfaces in the parking area, which would be, again, a model site, something for us to showcase as a good way to utilize parking spaces. But is it at this stage of the game, is it worth even throwing a topic into the mix about something like that?
You know, I think that's one of the reasons Rick and I are having that meeting tomorrow with Steve Carter, is to discuss these options. And sure, you know, that it really becomes on one hand, it really becomes a financial issue for the research park, a distance issue for the employer,
right,
and a financial issue for the research park because parking doesn't pay.
Right.
But yeah, that's a good idea. I know that there's a lot of interest in the existing businesses to have the trail system and to use it for that regard.
Right.
Whether it be parking somewhere and then walking into the office, or just going out on their lunch breaks or other breaks and going out for a hike too, is there's a lot of interest in that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, yeah. No. Good idea. We have started moving forward with the research park on design of the wetlands or the stormwater retention area that's necessary. So although we don't have an agreement in place yet, we haven't obligated any funds, but we have worked with them on design elements on that retention basin. So they are moving forward with implementing those design elements that we're discussing with them. So, and again, at no obligation to the county. You're probably all familiar. Oh, a number of months ago, we worked with Prairie Rivers of Iowa to put together a water quality initiative grant. That grant was awarded, and so Prairie Rivers has that. They're the fiscal agent on it. They have the funding for it. the contract has been signed between IDOLS and Prairie Rivers. We'll be interviewing for a watershed coordinator here in the next couple weeks, I think, next week maybe. And so moving forward with hiring that position. Really, there's no changes to the scope of what was put forward in the grant. You won't see recognition of Indian Creek in the grant, the Indian Creek watershed, but that's still the intent, is to move forward with the Indian Creek portion just the same. We did discuss also, when we were discussing this grant and in the budget work session, purchasing a water quality monitoring station. So that was in our budget. I'm moving forward with that as part of this project, because the consultants for that project also would be helping us with getting the monitoring going and doing the monitoring for it. So City of Ames is actually going to be doing all the lab work. But then we would be finding a volunteer, or somehow we'd be doing the data collection and the monitoring on it. So that's moving forward nicely. As far as just some other events happening, we just had the Partner Spring Festival. If any of you weren't maybe able to make it, but it was we probably had 400 people out there. The Sunday before this last, and it was a wonderful event, really, really well received. Beautiful weather. We had a volunteer appreciation event that we had about 80 people at. Again, went very well. This last in calendar year 14, we had 3,800 hours of given by volunteers. So that's about almost two FTEs. So that's a significant amount of volunteer support, and that's by 270 people. So quite a few people. Very, very appreciative for that. We also just started online registrations. So for our nature camps, this year we started online registration and payments. And we were a little bit shy of the opening morning when we allowed registration, because we didn't really know what to expect. We did it on a Saturday, which is different than what we normally do, and brought staff in on that Saturday to handle phone calls and questions on how do I do this on the website, et cetera, et cetera. And nary a question, and I'd say within half an hour, some of those camps were full already.
Wow.
So very well received, very well received. So we'll continue to move forward with our different offerings, different programs, putting them on the online registration and payments. We haven't started going that direction with camping yet, but we will. We'll probably identify a few camping spots that will be available by reservation, because we regularly get requests to do that. Let's see. Also, you may have heard of the new program we did this year with the Iowa Wildlife Center and the City of Ames, Parks and Rec, and the library, called the All Species Parade. We just had it a couple weeks ago, and it was amazing the number of the turnout that we got for that. Also, there were about 200 people in the parade, and so that was wonderful. There was 300 people that went through the exhibit area, and then there was a free concert afterwards, and there was 70, 80 people that attended that concert. So, wonderful event. It was a good partnership, something we haven't really done before with either of those entities in that regard. So it's a good event, something that I know generated a lot of excitement, a lot of Facebook hits also. So our Facebook has been growing right now. Shoot, we're at about 1,500 likes on Facebook, so that's quite a bit. We've got we try to get posts on there every day, and so that our audience via social media is growing exponentially. So that's wonderful. we also just are working with Fish and Wildlife Service right now and the DNR to get some pollinator. There's, I don't know if you've maybe heard of or aware of, there's an interest federally and state to coordinate or develop, I should say, some pollinator pathways. And I-35 is one of those. And so it's a certain radius either side of the interstate that Fish and Wildlife Service and the state will give you pollinator seed mixes to establish. And right now they're just doing it on public land. Because they can, you know, there's an assurance there that that is going to stay in that native cover. But the idea is to create these pollinator pathways to encourage butterfly migrations and movements and reproduction. So a lot of it's milkweed seed, but it's not just milkweed. So that's encouraging. We just signed an agreement to receive $6,000 worth of seed from those two entities for our areas. So that's wonderful. Lastly, the only other thing I wanted to mention is I'd say within the last couple months, I've made three trips down to the state capitol to discuss Iowa's Water and Land Legacy Fund. And you know that it's on the Senate. There's a bill on the Senate floor right now to fund put a 3/8 of a cent sales tax increase in that would go toward the Outdoor Rec and Natural Resource Trust Fund. So at the moment, there's not a lot of traction on the House. And until there's some movement in the House, it's probably not going to move forward further in the Senate. So. But it is it would be a significant move forward in both local conservation efforts, but also the nutrient reduction strategy. There are some estimates out there that with this funding, that nutrient reduction strategy can be accomplished in a fraction of the time that it would be accomplished at with current funding levels. So. So it's an important piece of legislation, but I'm not real optimistic that it's going to move forward this session.
Yep. Sure. Thanks, Mike. Thank Questions you, Mike. For Mike?
Nope.
Doing a great job. I'm glad you're feeling better.
Yeah, thanks.
Paul, liaison assignments.
Pass.
Wayne.
Pass.
And I'll pass. No other reports. Public forum number two, opportunities for members of the public to comment on items not on today's agenda. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to announcements for Supervisors. Paul.
Pass.
Wayne. And I'll pass as well.
Move adjournment.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.